I've been obsessed with hamburgers.
Hamburgers? Oh my God, that's so random.
Hamburgers. I probably had 3 hamburgers in the last like 2 weeks.
Oh my God.
I probably have had 3 hamburgers like in 2023.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Book Talk, Etc., a podcast bound to grow your TBR. I'm Tina.
And I'm Renee.
This is a conversational podcast about books and more from two Midwest mood readers who are easily distracted by new releases. And today, we're talking about the new releases that we were easily distracted by.
If you enjoy listening, we'd love for you to follow us on Apple Podcasts or subscribe on your favorite podcast app. And if you have a minute, please consider leaving us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or sharing us on social media. All of this truly helps other book lovers find us. Hey, Tina.
Hey, Renee. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm booked and busy, but we're happy. Ooh, it's Friday. Yes. You know, I'm ready for a bit of a break here. I'm ready for the weekend.
Yes, I like that. Booked and busy.
Booked and busy. And I'm recording in a new space. You can see my background. It's very cool. We made a little room in our basement and put a couch down here and some lights. And so I feel very profesh.
Yes. It's like your own lighting / recording studio.
I know. And I will do like my day job down here too sometimes. But yeah, I just like to pretend it's my recording space.
Okay, good. I'm excited to talk about new releases, although for the second time in a row, as soon as we decide we're going to focus on new releases, I'm like, well, I don't know what I want to read.
We are the worst mood readers. Like, it's a problem because we say we like having a topic, and I know I do because it keeps me on target, all of these things. But then I'm like, I love the idea of like, oh, good, new releases that I've been excited about. And then I'm like, what should I read? Like, what one should I pick up? Like, my mind like blanks for some reason. Even if I go back to our books on the radar. I'm like, all right, maybe I should read one of these. And then I'm like, I'm good. So anyway, did you come up with 2 that you think?
I definitely did. And one is one of my March books on the radar.
Mine too.
Good.
Yes.
Okay. I'm excited.
That, so, all right. Let me start, and I will tell you, my loving lately, it is March, which means it's officially March Madness season. I like March Madness in all of its forms. It signals the beginning of spring, and I'm nostalgic about it because years ago when John and I were first hanging out, we used to go to bars and watch March Madness games, and like, I love the unpredictability of it. I love making a bracket. I love that you don't have to have any real knowledge of it, so I'm just excited for the tournament to get started. But what I wanted to bring today is actually a book-related March Madness. So y'all might know Laura's Loaning Library on Instagram. But if you don't, she's a bookstagrammer, of course, like Renee and I. She also hosts, for the 4th year in a row now, she hosts Book Madness. And so basically what it is a March Madness-style bracket tournament, but for books. And she called out in the beginning of the year, you know, a couple weeks ago to make nominations through February for your favorite books that were released in 2022. So a bunch of people wrote in. I did a little Google sheet. I submitted some of my favorite books, and she does it in different categories. And then what she does is puts it all together and you get to make a bracket. And so I asked her really quick, I said, you know, before we were recording, I was like, is it going to be too late for our listeners to join in on the March Madness fun? And she said, no, because the brackets are not due until the 15th. So you all are going to have some time. If you wanted to get a little March Madness bracket in there, you can. We're going to link to her profile. She's really, really good about putting everything in a story. So if you go to her profile and look at March Madness, you'll be able to figure out what I'm talking about. But basically, you just go in and pick your favorite books. You know, they go head to head, just like real March Madness. And then one winner comes out at the end. And she also does voting in her stories. It's just a silly, fun way to like compete and like, I don't know, gamify the reading experience. So One, I wanted to mention March Madness. Two, I wanted to mention Book Madness. But also, I just love Laura. I've been connected with her for years. So if you're looking for another person to follow on Instagram, I highly recommend you check her out. That's Laura's Loaning Library and all things March Madness.
Oh, I love it. Yes, I didn't know about that. So I missed seeing that. So I am really glad you brought that. We have a couple days or a day, 2 days to get that in.
Get your brackets in. Yes. And again, we'll link and we'll put it in our stories too, so you can get joined in on the fun.
Okay, good. That's a good one. All right. Today I'm going with a product for my loving lately, and it's one that I have tested myself. I wanted to bring this before, but I thought, no, I'm going to make sure that everything's good. And it is a classic eucalyptus shower spa mist. It's from European Spa Source. I know that sounds like a lot, but it's very simple. It's basically just an aromatherapy spray, and it's made for the shower. I got full eucalyptus scent. You can also do a lavender eucalyptus, but they talk on the website, and I saw this on one of the daytime, like morning shows, and they talked about how it's supposed to be so relaxing. And the idea is to give you a spa-like experience. You know, if you've been into a spa, it smells good because they kind of pump things through the air filters, and there's something about a spa smell. So with this, you basically just turn your shower on and spray a few sprays into the water. Now, I love this so much, and it really, truly does give you a spa-like smell. It's really, it's not strong eucalyptus, but it's definitely eucalyptus. So if you have to like that, obviously, and I love it. I also spray it above the shower, around the shower, everywhere, and also in the water. I love it. I look forward to it. I take my showers at night usually, so this is perfect for me because it's relaxing. Kind of like ends my day, gives me something to look forward to, and it feels really luxurious, but it's really simple. They do say on their website that it's beneficial for reducing nasal congestion. I don't know. Maybe it's strong enough to do that, but I don't really need it for that, so I haven't really paid that much attention. What I will say, it does not make your shower floor slippery. So I wanted to make sure I tested that out for a while, and you know, I don't want to recommend anything that would do that. I love this. Very, very simple. I've probably used it every night for about 2 months, and I still have over half the bottle left. Yeah. So it'll last a while. I think the price point is like $39.98. Mm-hmm. So not horrible, and it will last. So that is Classic Eucalyptus Shower Spa Mist from European Spa Source.
Ooh, what a nice ritual for yourself to like end your day. You got that nice smell, kind of okay. Turn your brain off. Let's go to sleep or whatever.
Not something I would have thought about until I saw it on there. I'm like, this sounds perfect because I love I love scents. Like I like eucalyptus shower gel.
Mm-hmm. I like eucalyptus too.
So then when I saw this, I'm like, oh, that sounds good. But yeah, so I bet, you know, others might like it if you like the whole scented shower experience.
Scented shower experience. Let me ask you this. Does it last the duration of the shower or just like a couple minutes?
Well, it definitely lingers, but it is most, like the scent is strongest right in the beginning.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
But like once you leave the bathroom, if you go back in, you know, an hour later, you'll still smell it. It's just not quite as strong.
Okay. All right, good to know.
Yes. Well,
let's get into latest reads. And my latest read, I am doing something for the first time. We've not done this in almost 2 years of book talk, et cetera. I'm bringing a book that Renee has already talked about on the show. We tried not to. We are so diligent about not reading the same things and bringing you new books every time we record. But then we were thinking about it, like, wait a minute. Renee, when did you bring... The book is Notes on an Execution by Dania Kakufka. Do you remember when you brought it originally on the show?
January 2022.
See,
and then it ended up being in my top 10. And I didn't say that much about it then, as I did when I reviewed it. So that was a long time ago. And I actually you mentioned it and you weren't going to bring it. And I encouraged you to bring it mm-hmm. because I want to know what you think about it, good or right. bad. And I don't know what you thought about it. So I figured, why, if I want to know, I bet our listeners would like mm-hmm. to also know your opinion. Like they already know I loved it. So.
Yeah. And it's like, okay, if it was over a year ago, I feel like that's fair game. Like we probably, no one's listening to us and like, okay, this is what Renee said about it. You know what I'm saying? So like, anyway.
I don't even remember what I said about it exactly.
Me either. But I remember being like, man, I need to read that. So Notes on an Execution, it starts with Ansel Packer and it is the day that he is going to be executed. You know, this going into the story, he's known this day would come. And the book is told with omniscient narration. So you are in the brains of all of the different characters and you know it's true. It's no wrongful conviction situation. He knows what he's guilty of and we come to find out as readers. He's an interesting character and he is very set on not being forgotten. So during his time in prison, he has been writing his theory. Now, don't call it a manifesto. He was very clear that this is not a manifesto. These are his thoughts and philosophies and opinions, but he wants to be understood. That is his goal. And we come to learn who Ansel is, not directly following his life sequence from his point of view. We come to find out who he is through three influential women in his life, a mother, one's a sister, and one's a homicide detective. And we meet his mom when she's 17. That's when she has him. We find out that he had a very, very rough upbringing, and you kind of come to see how he came to be in this world. We meet Hazel, who is the sister of Ansel's later on wife. They're twins. They're, you know, pretty close to each other, and Hazel has to watch as her sister is in this relationship with the guy. She's like, I don't know. I'm just getting a weird vibe from. And then finally, you have Safi or Saffron, and she is a detective. She is somebody who's always devoted herself to seeing justice through and to really exploring what she feels in her gut is the correct answer. So you kind of watch and see. What's interesting about this book is the structure. I'll just say this. I absolutely loved this book, all of it. I love the structure. I love the writing. I love the angle that the author took. I love all of it. And I love that she decided to tell this serial killer story, not to glorify serial killer stories, but to focus on the women or the people that survive, the people that are around the individuals that get murdered. And what does that look like for them? And so throughout the book, the clock is ticking. Ansel is going to be executed very soon. And so, you know, it's kind of hour by hour almost. You see him, you know, go through the different steps toward potentially what's the ending. And what I thought was so good about this is it's literary, but it's also very propulsive. She did a great job in weaving all of these different considerations together without it ever feeling heavy-handed, ever. Mm-hmm. You almost don't know as a reader what the author thought of these characters or what she wanted you to think, because she kind of left it up to interpretation. I love that. I love when authors are able to do that, when they're not, you know, hitting you over the head with like, this is the lesson. This is what we should mm-hmm. be thinking. She just gives you the facts and you run with it. You do what you want with it. She's able to create very memorable characters. I had my favorite. I really liked his mom. I love learning about her. I also really love the detective Saffron, but she also gives you something to consider with Ansel, because you find out what happened to him in his early days and how he grew up and like what happened and all of these different things. And you're like, huh, this book reminded me that there's gray area. Everything is not black and white. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's a little bit of gray, right? And what do you do with that? This is thoughts on the American serial killer, America's fascination with serial killers, our criminal justice system, our obsession with true crime stories. And she's really asking the readers to, I guess, take a beat and consider all angles. I picked this for our In Real Life book club. And I will say, we met just yesterday. It made for one of the most fantastic book club conversations.
Oh, good.
Because it's a pretty big group. 7 or 8 of us, and we all had finished it. We all contributed. And there are some issues that we got to discuss, where we stand on them, what you would have done in that situation. And there was a little bit of debate, like, oh, why didn't this character do this? Or like, why did you think he did that? And it was just so fun to discuss. I walked away like really, really appreciating this book even more. So I will say, if you are a reader who doesn't mind being uncomfortable, if you're in a book club that doesn't mind darker stories, absolutely give this a shot. I loved this book. And one of my friends asked me, like, how would you rate it? They know I do the podcast. She was curious about my star rating. I'm like, oh, it's a long story. And so I'm not quite ready to, it's such a fresh reading experience. I'm not ready to rate it yet. I don't know how many stars I would give it. I'll just tell you, I highly recommend it. And I loved reading it. It's Notes on an Execution by Dania Kakufka.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Yes, that story really, you did a great job reviewing it. And it's a story that I'll be curious at this point, because you're reading it in a similar time frame than I did, whether it stays with you like it did mm-hmm. with me. And you know, the big reason it stayed with me was the ending. I found that to be one of the most haunting endings. That's why it stayed with me 11 months later and made my top 10.
Oh, absolutely. The ending was fabulous. And even Jonathan, my husband, our editor, read it. And at first he had his issues with it. And then I think it came together for him in the last 20%. He's like, oh, and really, really liked the ending. Most of the folks in the book club really enjoyed it as well. So I would say give this a shot if you've been curious. Also, not for nothing, the audiobook is so well narrated. It's really good on audio. I almost say, though, do a tandem. Listen and read in print, because you'll want to. I wish I had just time to sit there and savor it. There's some really good sentences. There's some really good philosophy. And I kind of wanted, there's a lot of characters, throughout. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have spent more time focusing on them other than the main ones. But I really liked this reading experience. It was a good one.
Okay, good. So this will not fall into a book we disagreed on.
No, absolutely not. No, I love this book. It was excellent.
Okay, good. All right. Well, my latest read is a memoir, and it is Never Finished: Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within by David Goggins. Have you heard of David Goggins, Tina?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I had not. Yes. Didn't know who he was. And this book was recommended to me by my oldest son, who just finished it and could not stop talking about it. And so he talked about it so much. And then, of course, I wanted to be able to talk with him about it. So then I got it on Audible. And it turns out that the audiobook is different than the print book, a bit different. And I'll tell you how. But what this is about is David Goggins takes you inside what he calls his mental lab, where he has developed a philosophy, psychology, and strategies that enable him to learn that what he thought was his limit was only his beginning, and that his quest for greatness is unending. Now, the tagline of his book is, "This is not a self-help book, it's a wake-up call." I would completely agree with that. Don't pick this up as a self-help book, although I did find it to be very motivating, but I also had issues with it. Now, David Goggins, turns out, is wildly popular. He's a best-selling author. He has 6 million followers on Instagram. He is a sought-after motivational speaker. He was a Navy SEAL. He was a pararescue EMT. He is a smoke jumper, and he is an ultra marathoner. I had no idea, which he chronicles in this book, that people even ran 243 miles or biked 444 miles.
In a row?
Yes.
Oh my God.
It's unbelievable. But here's the interesting thing. So this book is about, it's about his story and about how he is hashtag never finished. It's a look at his life from a bit about his childhood, but not a lot, because from what I'm hearing, what I'm gathering, he goes into that much more in his first book, which is Can't Hurt Me. This recent memoir is more up to date, more current, up until I think about the summer of 2022. This book does, however, talk about his childhood, which was pretty horrific. So the content warnings for child abuse and domestic violence. He doesn't mince words. He is very matter of fact. He will share a lot of what happened. And also in the audiobook, he has a conversation with his mom. And it is candid. It is tough. It is fascinating. And that was not in the print book, from what I gather. I asked my son. He said it wasn't in the print book. So the way that this story goes. Now, what David Goggins does is he tells his story, but he is someone that puts an extraordinary amount of stress on his body. I mean, just the running and all of that. But he didn't just run. Like, he ran a lot of times with broken bones. He ran with significant injuries. And so this is not something that I would add. Like, there are parts of this book that read like, if you were reading fiction, you would say, okay, I've passed the point of suspending my disbelief because this is outrageous. But it's true. This is what he did. My issues with it, on the one hand, while I found it very motivating, I mean, every now and then, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of tough love. And even for me, I was like, gosh, okay, I didn't think about things from that perspective as far as things that he had to say that were very motivating. On the other hand, this is someone who has had a significant amount of trauma, and it left me wondering, has he worked through that to the, or is that possibly why he continues to put his body through what he puts his body through? There's something to be said for listen to your body, and he would not say that. He would say, you know, push through, which I don't tend to agree with. There's quite a lot of excellent reviews on Goodreads that kind of talk about this better than I think I am, because I'm just hit or miss on this book. There's so much good. I mean, I didn't know what it took, like really what it took to train, to be a Navy SEAL, to be a smoke jumper. Oh my, I mean, amazing, just incredible, fascinating stories in this book. The structure of the audiobook is this. His friend narrates the chapters of the book. I wasn't crazy about that. But the flip side of having his friend do it is in between those chapters is an actual quote unquote podcast interview between his friend and David. So what happens is his friend reads the chapter, and he was all right, average audiobook narrator. Then David comes in, and then they talk about that chapter. Oh, and it's almost cool. Like you get real-time narration from David. Like, this is what was happening. This is what I was thinking. This is what I want you, a reader, to take from this experience. So by about the midpoint, I was all in on this structure. And then, like I said, then he has the interview with his mom. So there is a lot in the audiobook that is different than the print book. I'm not sure where I landed. I have a lot that I would like to talk about with other people about this book. I'm still talking with my son about it. And so that's been great. So I guess my point is, this is a really great discussion book. I will say, if you have an issue with language, just be forewarned, he uses a lot of foul language in the book. And he also uses some very harsh language, which I wasn't crazy about, that almost left me as the reader feeling shamed. Like how he thinks about and perceives the types of people that he would deem mediocre. I was thinking, well, that's me, David. Like, sometimes I want to watch TV for 6 hours, and he would have a lot to say about that. Or you know what I mean? Like, that's his approach. So take for that what you will. Just know that if you pick this up, you're going to get a very interesting reading experience, especially if you do the audio. So that was Never Finished, Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within by David Goggins.
I'm really glad you brought that. That is different from, I think, almost anything we've brought to the show previously. And
yes,
I think that could totally work for some people. I am not some people right now. I don't want to be yelled at, or not yelled at, no. But I don't want to be scolded. I'm like, listen, I'm hanging on by a thread, baby. It's third winter in Chicago. Like, I'm doing what I can. And he would call me a baby and tell me to suck it up. But I do know of him. One of my friend's husbands actually gave me his first book, Can't Hurt Me, and told me to read it. Sorry, I have not yet, Nate, but I will. It's still on my shelf. At some point, I'm like, maybe I will, because it does sound interesting. It's an interesting point of view.
Yeah, I actually debated about bringing it, but then I do think it would be a great discussion book. And it's his memoir. He's not putting this out there as a self-help book.
That's true. Right. You did say that. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I read a really good Goodreads review that said, take this book and use it, like take morsels of it.
Yes.
As a, you know, take what you need, take what you find motivating from his story and take that with you and let the rest go. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great advice.
I think that makes sense for a lot of memoir or like even self-help type books. Like that makes sense because it's not going to work 100% for everybody, everything. But I do think that's kind of why I like memoirs. You can learn and you don't have to take everything, but certainly there are some parts that are going to resonate.
Yes, exactly. So I think I will read his first book. Now, my son is reading his first book, Can't Hurt Me Now, and he says that I will like that one even better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think I will give it a try.
Nice. All right. Well, for book talk today, we had this idea to talk a little bit about how we write book reviews and what we like to see when we're reading book reviews. I know that there are some listeners that are new to Bookstagram or want to get into it or want to get into NetGalley or rating their own books on Goodreads just for fun. And we thought it kind of would be fun to talk about that. I don't know if we ever have shared, like, how do we create our reviews? I mean, because that's what we do. We're book reviewers.
Yeah, right. Okay. So do you have a format for yourself or do you just wing it when you're writing a book review?
I start with the synopsis. I always copy and paste it. So, okay, let me back up. I think writing reviews for the show is going to be different than what I write for Instagram or for, you know, Goodreads even. And I'll start with the show because that's what, you know, is the longest and most in-depth review. I always start with a synopsis and have that just on my page because there are elements that I want to take from it to put readers into a time and space so that they know enough to be interested in the book. So I start with that and then I share my particular thoughts. My goal with reviews is to get the reader hooked and interested without spoiling anything.
And that's a really tough needle to thread.
It is. It is. I know. Even just now when I was talking about notes on an execution, I was like, you know, I don't think I said too much, but I'm like, you know, maybe some readers might find it. Because I also know, too, I am not a reader who minds knowing a bunch going in. I don't care about spoilers. I mean, obviously, huge spoilers will ruin it for me. But like, I don't mind knowing. I also don't mind not knowing. I can go either way. It does not like super affect my reading experience. The one thing that will affect my reading experience is reading other people's reviews. In terms of the plot, I don't care. I could know or I could not know, but reading other people's reviews, I've stay away from because it does have an effect on how I'm processing as I'm reading. But I start with that synopsis and kind of get my thoughts down. And I don't care about star ratings. I know this has like been a hot topic on TikTok and people have been talking about star ratings. Because there's this one creator that said we should have a standardized understanding of what star ratings mean on Goodreads. And people were like, bah, what do you mean? And I too was like, what do you mean? No, don't tell me how to rate. I'm being true. I read a lot of 4 and 5s because I know what I like. But anywho, you know this about me. I don't really care about star ratings. And I find that especially on Instagram, if I just put star ratings, people might be less likely to actually read what I'm writing. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at. What about you? What's your format if you have one?
I don't know. Okay. I guess I do have kind of a general format. And when I was writing strictly for my blog, which then I would kind of put those onto Goodreads, the guidelines I set for myself were start with what is this about? So then I will see if I can condense what I think the story is about into a paragraph that hooks the person reading the review. Now, I will also have the synopsis handy just to make sure, because a lot of those are really helpful because they're marketing. So if it's a well-written marketing synopsis, you can pick and choose like what to include in your own explanation of what is this book about. I don't want to spend too much time there, but then I immediately think to like my next section is, how did this book make me feel? I'm a big feelings reviewer, and I always have been.
Yeah.
And how I feel about something is not necessarily going to be about how you're going to feel about something. But I think it's important in my reviews to say, okay, this is how I felt. This is what I liked. This is what I didn't like, in a way that doesn't spoil the book, though. So it's all like, it's all practice, especially if I'm going to critique a book. I don't want to read reviews that say, this book is trash,
right,
or I hated this book. Mm-hmm. That doesn't tell me. I need to know why in a constructive way. I want to read reviews that tell me, how did you feel, a little bit about what is it about, and why did you feel the way you felt? That's all I need to know, and that's what I try to do. So if I'm going to critique it, I'm going to tell you in the most general way that I can why it didn't work for me or what issues I had with it. But if I loved it, I think that's almost harder to write about because it ends up feeling like very gushy because I loved it. And then you have to try to figure out how to write, why did you love it? You're right. We've talked about that before, but obviously I'm not going to include every single detail. I want to finish my review. And I think this is helpful for people that might be just starting out or, you know, want to review a book anywhere. How can you say what you want to say in the least amount of words, but that is going to leave somebody with either saying, okay, that book is for me or that book isn't for me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I always try and close my reviews with, you might like this if you're looking for this. You might like this if you're looking for that. Even if it didn't work for me. It didn't work for me because of this. But if you like that, then it will likely be something you want to give a shot. When you're writing your reviews, who do you have in mind? Who are you writing them for?
The general reader, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Isn't that interesting? It's kind of sweet that we're just all out here writing reviews for the general reader. We're just out here trying to help each other find like the best books that we can. You know, even when I started, both of us started years and years ago, it's just like, I don't know. I just put my stuff out there. And I think that's the best way to start, quite honestly. You do not need to, you don't need to be getting ARCs and NetGalley, meaning in order to have a valid point of view. And when you're reviewing, get it from your library. Whatever books you have on your Kindle, whatever books you have in your home, that's where you can start writing your reviews because you nailed it. It is a craft. It is something that you will get better at with time. And you'll figure out what works for you, what doesn't work for you. I really like when people, I tend to like, come at it very in an academic way. I can't help it. I'm a professor, adjunct professor. Like I write it in paragraphs, but I do like it when folks are able to distill it, what worked, what didn't work. Like when I'm looking quickly through Instagram, I always appreciate when people are able to do it in that way and give you like the quick skinny on what the book is. I just find for me as my style is a little bit more wordy, but you'll find your own way. You'll find your own style.
My style is wordy also. And the times on Instagram, especially where I have been in a hurry and I've just put, I say bullet points, but I really use like little check marks and said, these are the main reasons I like this book. And those are the times people are like, oh, I love this format.
Right. I know.
just short and sweet. But I do like to write longer reviews, but I also appreciate that sometimes people just want to see, like, give me just the facts. What did you, like, how did you feel about it? Sometimes people don't even necessarily care what it's about. They just want to know, what did you think of it?
But I like longer reviews, too, because then I like, when I have read the book, I'm like, oh, I want to know everything. Tell me what you thought. I want to know the ins and outs. Give me it all, you know, because then you can feel like you're having a bit of a conversation. I think reviewing is fun. I still, you know, it's not, writing book reviews is not, I don't know. That's not the part I like. The part I like is the connection afterwards, the connection after it posts, yes, or the connection after we publish an episode and talk about the book with, you know, our patrons or our listeners or friends in, mm-hmm, real life. Like, that's the fun part. But in order to do that, I do really like having solid notes because I forget. I'm reading a lot, babe. Like, yeah. You know, you got to like kind of get the main points down. And boy, I know when writing this show or doing this show, we're so happy that we have our notes from years ago because it's been helpful to say, oh my God, what did I think of that book? Oh yeah, I remember this part.
Yes. And I, as far as star ratings go, I love them. I won't give them up. I sometimes put mine at the very end of my review because I'm hoping people will read my review before getting to the star ratings. But I do like star ratings. And I like them most importantly for myself. It helps me get a quick look at my books. It helps me put my books into a category in my own mind as to, you know, was it 5-star amazing? I don't know. I just like it. There's something, but I'm so analytical that, mm-hmm, I think it just works for me. I just love them. But I do think if anyone's listening that thinks that they're even a little bit inclined to enter into a book community, whether it's Goodreads, Instagram, anywhere, you don't have to have a set format. Just start writing. Just like you said, get a library book, anything, write a review, put it out there. And I think you'll be really surprised at how much fun you would have with the interaction with other book people.
Yes, absolutely. This might be controversial, but if I was starting from ground zero right now, today in 2023, you know what I'm doing. And this works for me. I would start a TikTok, a book talk, yeah, because the algorithm is just, there is something to it. You can build a following pretty quickly. However, I would also have a book Instagram, because the connection's not there on TikTok. You know, it just doesn't, mm-hmm, not to say it's not there at all, but, and I think I'm definitely obviously biased because I've been doing Instagram for way longer. But if you're starting from the jump, I would say try video too. If you're not somebody that maybe likes to write your reviews out, certainly you can talk them out. That's a way of reviewing too.
That's a good suggestion because you're so good at reviews. I mean, you're so good at videos. I am not comfortable with video, so I would not jump to video. Mm-hmm. I started with the blog and Goodreads. Actually, Goodreads was before the blog, but I feel more comfortable doing that. So Goodreads would be a great place to start. Video, I think you're exactly right. If you were going to choose a platform to just try out video, TikTok would be the way to go. And we will link to Tina's TikTok, because it's so good. And also, yes, I don't know if our listeners know you have such a good TikTok going, but lots of extra content. I mean, and I guess that's the thing. Like, when you like talking about books and writing about books, you can take so many different forms.
Yes.
Right? I mean,
you don't have to pick just one. Do them all. You know,
yes,
whatever. Try them out and see what works organically for you would be my suggestion. But share your opinion. Like, don't feel like because, oh, I don't have any followers that, you know, no one's going to care. It's not true. We care about the books. We care about what, you know, people are saying about the books we're reading. And then we'll come to get to know reviewers. And then you're like, okay, anything that, you know, this XYZ creator posts, I want to know about because I'm curious. I like their style. I want to, mm-hmm, know what they think. So,
right.
Anyway, it's so funny. Renee and I are the worst. We're like, you know, we don't have much to say about writing reviews. Like, this will be quick, like in and out. We should know better. All right. I do think we should get into our books though.
Yes.
All right. And again, we are talking about new releases. These are books that have been published within the last couple of months. And mine actually comes out today. It is a book called Our Best Intentions by Vibhuti Jain. And I bought this two March books on the radar. So if it sounds familiar, that might be why. This is a debut. And what sold me on it is that everyone was saying it's in the vein of Celeste Ng. And I can say I absolutely see that. I totally agree. So what you have is this family that has immigrated to the U.S. and Bobby Singh is a single parent and owner of this fledgling kind of Uber-type business called Move with Bobby. He's very, very focused on providing for his daughter, Angie, and about achieving the American dream. He's changed their names to be more Americanized, and he's really, really just focused on trying to climb the ladder and give his daughter everything that he can. They live in the suburbs in New York, and Angie is a bit of an introvert. Her love is swimming. That is her thing. She started going swimming after school when she was really little, and so she grew to love it, and that is where we enter this family's story. She's in high school. She's a sophomore in high school, and during summer break, she's actually walking home from training from the pool when she finds Henry McCleary, a wealthy classmate from a prominent family, stabbed and bleeding out in the football field. He's literally, like, she walks away just as this incident has happened. And the police immediately focus their investigation on Shiera Tompkins, who is a runaway African-American girl who disappears immediately after the stabbing. And it's later discovered she wasn't properly enrolled at the local high school. So the community is just in shock. What happened? How did this kid get stabbed? And they are going to some pretty extreme lengths to figure out what happened. And as you can imagine, the family with means, the family with resources are pulling a lot of strings to make sure that the right person gets justice, that they get justice for Henry, who had been stabbed. Angie's kind of in the middle of this. She knows Henry. He is the brother of her best friend. They're kind of on the outs a little bit, she and the friend, but like she definitely knows Henry. And she is afraid to share what she thinks she knows. She's kind of like, what did I see? What do I know? She's starting to question herself. Because remember, she's 16. She's like still really, really young. And so the story basically goes through different perspectives as we work toward to figure out what really happened on the football field and who really stabbed Henry. There's a lot to like about this. I really enjoyed the father and daughter story. I liked Bobby as a character. He's a sympathetic character, even though some of his actions and decisions, I'm like, ugh, I don't know if that's the thing that I would have done, but I'm not working from an immigrant perspective. I'm not working from a single father perspective. So you kind of come to understand him. I like that we again have this omniscient narration, so you know what Bobby's thinking, you know what Angie's thinking, and the author does a good job switching in the chapters between characters. And we hear from everybody. I'm talking the principal, the friend of Henry, Angie, everybody gets a point of view. At a certain point in time, I'm like, okay, there were some characters I think I cared more about. And I'm like, can we get back to this kind of central story? But I understand why they were included. This is said to be a gripping page turner. I would not call it that. I think it's more of a quiet story. It is more about means. It's more about, you know, kids that fall through the cracks. It's more about point of view, perspective, definitely some interesting elements. But I have to be honest and say, I finished it this week, Monday or Tuesday. I had to look up a lot of the finer points. I couldn't tell you what happened. I was like, wait, who were the kids? Like, where? I had to like recenter myself. Now, to be fair, I read Notes on an Execution after and the one I'm about to tell you about. So there's been some time in between, mm-hmm. but it's not that long. And so ultimately, I liked it. There are elements that made me uncomfortable that I'm not going to tell you because it is a spoiler. So if you read this, which I would say, definitely give it a try if it at all sounds interesting. And I would love to talk to somebody about it because there are elements that I think would make for good discussion. One thing in particular makes me uncomfortable. I would say if you liked Tiffany D. Jackson's book, Monday's Not Coming, this would make a fantastic pairing because it's, again, about these characters that are kind of falling through the cracks and you know, just lose themselves. They don't have the support of the family and friends that you would hope to see. I thought this was good. I thought it was interesting, and I would definitely read more by this author. It was Our Best Intentions by Vibhuti Jain.
Okay, good. That's a fair review.
Yeah. Renee, what's your first book?
My first book is Red Queen by Juan Gomez Jurado. Came out March 7th. This is a thriller in translation and is one of my March books on the radar. I'm going to have to be really quick. I know I just recently told you about this book. So to refresh your memory, it's about Antonio Scott And she is introduced as this new character, and she is compared in the marketing of the book to Lisbeth Salander. I would agree with that. Ooh. I would agree with that. I know. I was pleasantly surprised because I did not think she would, you know, she would live up to Lisbeth Salander from the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. I love that series. I mean, she is not the same character, but you will get the vibes. And Antonia Scott is the daughter of a British diplomat and a Spanish mother, and she is very gifted as far as her ability to pick apart crimes, crime scenes, crime motivations. She can reconstruct crimes and solve baffling murders because of the way her mind works, the way she holds facts and details. I mean, she can remember, okay, if you told her the speed at which a car was going and how many miles did it need to, you know, to get to blah, 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 blah. She can calculate that in seconds. Like, it's that sort of mind. And she has always been able to work with that to help solve crimes. But something has happened in her life. It is very traumatic, and she has refused to continue working. She barely leaves her apartment. Enter John Gutierrez, who is a police officer who has been sent to get Antonia out of her apartment. I really liked him. I really liked both of these characters. I will say, you meet both of them from the start, and I really liked him. John has been suspended. He's about to face criminal charges for something that he did. And in order to salvage his career, they're giving him one last shot to get Antonia because they need her to come work on these new cases. And what the cases are, one case is the murder of a teenaged boy from a very wealthy family, and his body was found in the family room without any blood left in his body. The other case is almost like the present day, like the current case, which is a kidnapping of the daughter of one of the richest men in Spain. That is a crime which just might be tied to the previous murder. They have to figure it out. How are they tied? What's going on? It's a complex plot because behind both of these cases is a hidden mastermind with very sinister plans. Of course, John and Antonia, not a spoiler, are going to work together, try to work together if they can get along and try to solve these crimes before the killer strikes again. Okay, this is definitely has a Nordic noir type of feel to it. It is fast paced, except for one part. And I will say I did listen to this on audio because Scott Brick narrates. He narrates all of the Orphan X books. He is one of my favorite narrators. He did an amazing job with voices, accents, dialogue, and pacing. Fantastic. If you can get the audio, I would suggest it. However, I would have a print or an ebook handy because it's a little confusing to keep up with the quickly shifting plot points. And the reason I say that is I was in this. I needed to know, like, what's happening with both of these cases? So, for example, you would be in the thick of the action as far as the kidnapping of the daughter of the rich guy. And then all of a sudden, you would be hit with an immediate backstory, like a flashback. The flashbacks were set right in the middle of present action. And so listening to that, I was like, wait a minute. What's going on? Where are we at? Now, who are we? But it also took me out of that present day suspense. So I wasn't crazy about that, but I was really into the story. So I guess I fall a little bit in between as far as, yes, this is a thriller. However, if that bothers you, the backstory in the middle of lots of things, then you're going to be bothered. If that doesn't bother you, I think you're really going to like this. If you like the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series, I think you should give this a try. I will say, I didn't know where this was going. A lot of it was a bit of a surprise, and where I ended up landing. This is a trilogy, I believe. I will absolutely pick up book two for the sole reason of that I need to know what else is going to happen with these characters. Like, mm-hmm. I'm here for the characters. I'm hoping that maybe the plot structure will be different in the next book because I wasn't crazy about that, but definitely like the characters. So that is Red Queen by Juan Gomez Jurado.
Mm-mm-mm. Good. I know that one was high on your
anticipation
really high on list. So
yes.
I'm glad you got to it. I will probably just let you, you know, let the trilogy come out and maybe pick up with it a couple years from now. But it does sound really good. And it sounds very propulsive, you know, mm-hmm. except for that
backstory.
Some backstory.
Flashbacks, I guess. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
Middle of the plot flashbacks.
It makes sense. All right, folks. I don't have much to say about this next one. It is The Housemaid's Secret by Freda McFadden. This was like a warm hug for me. Now, that seems a little weird to say because there's definitely a little bit of, you know, foul play going on here. Mm-hmm. I just love her books. I just find them to be soothing for my soul. I feel like this must be how people who like reread books or who read a lot of rom-coms feel. It's just comforting, even though, again, the characters are, you know, bad, right? There's bad things that happen. This is just fun for me to read. Like, I could not flip the pages fast enough. If you're not familiar, this is the second book in the Housemaid's trilogy, series, whatever it's going to be. So far, there's only two books in it. This one came out on February 15th, and you definitely want to read the first book because you're introduced to Millie. And Millie is a house cleaner, but she has a very interesting backstory that we come to find out in book one. And then in book two, she is now on the lookout for a new employer. She's trying to find someone who doesn't ask too many questions about her past and thanks her lucky stars when she finds the Garrick family. They give her a job. She's cleaning their immaculate penthouse. And she figures, okay, you know, let me work here a while till I get back on my feet. Definitely, I'm not going to do some of the things that I used to do before to get by. I'm just going to focus on this job and focus on my boyfriend, Brock. And things are okay, except, you know, Mr. Garrick's a little bit particular. There's this guest bedroom. He says, Mrs. Garrick is very sick. Do not under any circumstances let her out, or not let her out, but he says, do not under any circumstances bother her. She's very sick, very tired. Don't knock on that door. Of course, Millie has absolutely no self-control and immediately upon working there starts to investigate. She cannot help herself. And that's kind of why I like Millie. She is a character that is just, you're going to be shaking your head the entire time. Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Just mind your business. But she can't help it. I just enjoyed this book from top to bottom, honestly. I think will work very well if you're somebody who super busy. You've got a lot going on. You're not looking for writing that's going to knock your socks off. You are just looking for pure entertainment, popcorn read. It's kind of like eating fast food. It like satisfies you, it satiates you in the moment. It's not super filling. You're not going to like grow as a person from having read this, but you're going to be entertained. And there's something to that, right? There's really something to that. I'm delighted. I like this author a lot. She has a huge backlist. I also find her books to be very accessible. Like, if you're not somebody that reads 100 books a year, but like wants to read a little bit, this could be a fun way to like get used to reading and like read a few more titles. You can also get a lot of her books on Kindle Unlimited if that's something that you have. And I know a bunch are also available on Hoopla. So I had a lot of fun with this. I actually have to admit, I like this better than The Housemaid. I think because I knew what I was getting into. I knew it. I got the shtick. I got the game. And I was kind of pleasantly surprised by the ending. She got me. Now, both Renee and I are terrible detectives, so you might not be gotten. But I was like, oh, wow. Like, I am, you know, I had so much fun with this. So this was The Housemaid's Secret by Freda McFadden.
All right. Okay, good. I wondered. I was a little hesitant to start it because I didn't know if I would like it as much as The Housemaid.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely did. I was surprised, but it doesn't take much to surprise me.
I love what you had to say about it, though. Sometimes you just want a popcorn read.
You do. You just need it. It was like a balm, like truly, because I was feeling a little down. I really had high hopes for Our Best Intentions. I really wanted it to be a 5-star slam dunk. And I was like, gosh, I'm a little let down. Notes on an Execution was excellent. But then this one kind of just rounded out my reading week. I was like, ah, what a pleasant way to end it.
Oh, good. All right. Okay. All right. My next book is a March 21st release. And Tina and our patrons have already heard me talk about this, but I needed to bring this to the main show. It is A Flaw in the Design by Nathan Oates. This book is so good. This is about the fact that the cleverest psychopaths hide in plain sight. And this is about Gil, who is living a quiet life as a creative writing professor in a quaint Vermont town. When he receives some shocking news, it turns out his sister and her husband have been killed in a car accident in New York City, and Gil and his wife have been named as the guardians of their only son, 17-year-old Matthew. So that would mean that Matthew would soon be coming to live with Gil, his wife, and their two daughters. And the problem is, Gil and his wife are not sure about taking in Matthew. Yes, he just lost both of his parents, but they haven't seen him in 7 years. And the last time the families were together, Matthew did something that terrified Gil and his wife, and which they found completely unforgivable. And since that particular incident, Gil had been estranged from his sister and her flashy, wealthy banker husband. Okay, but Gil and his wife reason with each other. Time has passed. Matthew has no family left except them, so they decide they're going to give him a chance, bring him into their home. And when he arrives, Matthew seems like a completely different kid than the kid they saw 7 years before. Obviously, he's grown up, but he's also charming. He's smart and personable, although he seems strangely unaffected by his parents' deaths. So as the days go on, Gil hopes they can put the past behind them. And then one day, he's surprised to find out that Matthew, without consulting Gil, has signed up for Gil's creative writing class at the local university. Okay, he goes with it. It's fine. He's able to do that because he is a senior and he's able to take like college credit. It turns out Matthew proves to be one of the more engaged students in class until one day when he begins turning in chilling stories of murder that hit a bit too close to home for Gil. So Gil, bewildered and panicked, decides he must take matters into his own hands. Okay, that's all I can tell you. This book was bingeable for me, although I will say it's a slow burn suspense. This is not a fast-paced thriller. It's slow burn the entire way through because there is a definite underlying element of someone being conned. And if so, who? Is it the reader? Is Gil conning Matthew? Is Matthew conning everyone? What is going on? There is such perfect tension throughout this entire story. And what I will say is if you love feeling uneasy, unsure, off balance, if you like being uncomfortable in your reading, I think you are really going to like this because the way this is written made me feel tense. I felt like I have to keep reading. I have to read this as quickly as possible because I have to know what is going on. And how is it going to turn out? This is a story that makes you feel like the other shoe is going to drop and you need to know who's going to be impacted. How is it going to turn out? It's being billed as edge of your seat and a twisting psychological thriller. That I would completely agree with. I really hope that we see a lot of people pick this up. I would love to talk with you about it when you read it. It is A Flaw in the Design by Nathan Oates.
Yes, that one sounds good. All right, let's do some shelf editions. What do you think?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. This one I found on TikTok, actually, and it was from the publisher, and they were interviewing the author about his book, and immediately I was like, I got to bring this to the show. I got to put this on. Get this to the people. It is Even If Everything Ends by Jens Liljestrand. I'll send it to you.
Oh, okay.
This one comes out on May 9th. And this is a climate change, natural disaster type of book. And life is going on after the face of a climate crisis. And this is a debut that follows four characters as they struggle to survive in a burning world. So climate change has happened. It has escalated beyond our worst nightmares and people become refugees now. And the world keeps turning. People are living and things go on as usual. You've got this crisis, but also you've got teenaged love stories. You've got marital collapses, identity, you know, and people just trying to get by. Diedrich is a 40-year-old media consultant whose misguided efforts to become the family hero render him a pathetic vision of masculine incompetence. Melissa is an influencer with a suitcase full of lost dreams after denying climate change for years. Andre is a 19-year-old loser son of an international sports star who uses the erupting violence around him to orchestrate his own personal vengeance against his father. And Vilja is Diedrich's teenage daughter who steps into a leadership role in the face of adult ineptitude, which I kind of like. And this is said to be simultaneously nerve-wracking, astute, and very entertaining. It's told through these four related stories, but it sounds like they all come together in the end. And it kind of paints this picture of what potentially could be a very near future. And it's out there, but it's also scarily realistic. So I thought it sounded super interesting. And again, this book is Even If Everything Ends by Jen Liljestrand.
Oh, okay. That sounds right up your alley.
I know.
Yeah.
No, when he was talking about it, and it was so cute too, because his daughter, he flipped it and he was saying like part of his inspiration for writing it was his daughter. And then the camera flips and it's her recording him and she's like, hey.
and then
she flips back to her dad. So it was really cute. I was like, all right. They charmed me. They won me over.
All right. My shelf edition is You Can Trust Me by Wendy Hurd. Comes out June 13th. And this is right up our cons and schemes alley, Tina. This is about Summer and Leo, two friends who would do anything for each other. They are spending their time traveling around sunny California in Summer's tricked-out Land Cruiser. It's not a glamorous life that they live, but it gives them the freedom that they crave. They're looking to kind of get away from family expectations and the painful past they've left behind. But even free spirits have bills to pay. So luckily, Summer is a skilled pickpocket, a small-time thief, and a con artist. And Leo, determined to pay her own way, has learned a trick or two from Summer. And then Leo sets her sights on Michael Forrester, a self-made billionaire. When her charm wins him over, Leo's rewarded with an invite to his private island off the coast of Los Angeles for a night of fabulous excess. Her plan is to go because she eagerly anticipates returning with photos that can be sold to the paparazzi, jewelry that can be liquidated, and endless stories to share with Summer. However, what happens instead is that Leo disappears. And Summer is left wondering what happened. The police assure her that her friend probably just ditched her. I mean, after all, who would believe that this philanthropic billionaire would be up to no good? Summer kind of believes he was. So on her own, for the first time in years, she decides to infiltrate Michael's island and find out what really happened. This is being billed as a sharp, sexy, feminist thriller for those who wished that White Lotus Season 2 was told from the point of view of Mia and Lucia. So if you've watched White Lotus Season 2, you'll know that reference. And that is really what intrigued me about this story. So this is You Can Trust Me by Wendy Hurd.
Did you bring that to Mailbag?
I don't think so, did I?
I know I've heard you say, maybe it wasn't you, but I really thought it was. If you wished White Lotus Season 2
did I bring it to Mailbag?
Was about... not 100%.
Hold on. Let me check my...
Because that last part, I'm like, that sounds familiar.
Okay, hold on. I don't see it on my mailbag.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
Oh, anyway. That's it for today. We thank you for spending a part of your day with us. Links to all the books mentioned can be found in the show notes. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help us by following us wherever you listen and by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps us get our show out to new listeners and grows our audience. And don't forget, if you would like access to exclusive bonus content, you can join us for $5 a month on patreon.com/booktalketc.
If you'd like to connect with us, email us at booktalketc@gmail.com. You can also find us at booktalketc on Instagram, Tina at tbretc, and me, Renee, at It's Book Talk. Talk to you next week. In the meantime, remember,
everything's better with books. Did I bring it?
Did you?
I didn't.
Oh, God, did
no,
you?
No, no, no. No.
Okay, good. Did I bring it already as a shelf edition?
I'll look it up. What's it called? No, you did it.
Okay, you can
What's
trust
entitled?
Me.
You can trust me.